You are listening to the Hirschsprung's Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprung's disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprung's, with a positive message throughout.
Hello and welcome to episode 58 of Tom's Hirschsprung's podcast. I am joined by Courtney all the way from Philadelphia this afternoon. Welcome to the podcast, Courtney.
Hello. Thanks for having me, Tom.
Thank you so much for coming on. And we are going to talk about your experiences as a mother with your son who has Hirschsprung's. And your son is only around sort of one and a bit, is that right?
Just a little over one.
A little over 1 year old. So still very new to the Hirschsprung's life, the Hirschsprung's parenting life. So to get your perspective on that, I think will be absolutely fascinating in the next sort of 45 minutes or so. From there, then, I guess, we'll start very much from the beginning. We were talking a little bit beforehand about this no family history of Hirschsprung's, so much like myself and many others, no family history whatsoever. At what point, if you take us really, I guess, from the beginning, at what point did you start to maybe suspect, or did doctors start to suspect, that something may be a little bit different?
Yeah, so we had a very interesting start to our journey of being new parents and having our son, Theo. He was born on November 6th. Everything was great. And while we were in the hospital, you know, we very shortly kind of knew right away there was something going on, but we didn't know what. Just like you stated, obviously, something like Hirschsprung's or anything like that was never on our radar, never anything like that. And while we were in the hospital originally, he didn't have a bowel movement, which I now know as a mom that that is something that you're supposed to have as a checkoff. And the hospital kind of just said, it's fine, you know, he'll be fine, and discharged us home on our way. We were home for only a day with our son. And we just, I guess you could just chalk it up to mom instincts, where I just knew there's something going on here. And I obviously had no idea exactly what it was. We went to our pediatrician appointment, and he was not taking down his formula, his milk. He wasn't having bowel movements. And his, I don't know if everyone is familiar with the bilirubin, but his bilirubin numbers were really high. So what bilirubin is essentially when you first have a bowel movement when a baby is born, it's basically the toxins coming out of your body. It's very common for newborn babies to have a higher number of bilirubin. And what they'll do is kind of put you under a light, which kind of just brings your numbers back down. It will, you know, and that's pretty much what they do in the hospitals. His bilirubin's number was really high because he had never actually had a bowel movement of these toxins. So they actually brought us back to the hospital with the thought of taking care of this bilirubin. Now, I kept saying to them, I'm confused, though. He's here. He's been, you know, on this earth now for 5 days and still hasn't had a bowel movement. That seems like really not okay. I'm not a doctor, I'm not a nurse, but to me, that just sounds like something that probably should have happened by now. I was with my husband, we kept saying that. And what I was told in the hospital was, you're just a nervous hormonal mom. He's fine. He just needs to go under the lights and he will be fine. And you're just not feeding him enough. So I said, okay, well, I will continue to feed him while we are here. And they told me I should be feeding him an ounce every hour while he was in the hospital. So we tried to do that, and he would vomit up the milk that we were giving him. So I said, well, he's vomiting every time I'm trying to feed him. You know, what is going on? And they said, that's not vomit. That's just spit up. You're just nervous. You're hormonal. They told me this several times. Now, I do work in healthcare, so I knew that although I was getting very agitated, that I needed to just stay calm because they had already tagged me as this mom who's just a nervous new mom who's going to freak out at every little, you know, every little thing that happens. So that continued throughout the first 24 hours of us being in the hospital. I would feed him, he'd vomit. I'd feed him, he'd vomit. They kept telling me it's just spit up. Until the next morning, it turned green. So I called the doctors in and I said, excuse me, I think this is bile now. I don't think that this is just, you know, spit up or vomit. And they told me that, no, mom, that's just from your breast milk. So I was very confused because, you know, again, I'm not a doctor, but my breast milk wasn't green. So, you know, I kind of, I'm not sure. I was like, I feel like I would notice that, but, you know, I'm a new mom here, so maybe this is common. So that continued on for the first 48 hours of us in the hospital. You know, I felt like we just kept saying, this doesn't seem right. This doesn't seem right. And we finally got them to agree to get the gastroenterologist involved and to do some further checking. So when they brought him down to do the original check, so what they'll do is they put the bag of fluids in and they, you know, will fill up his lower intestine so they can do the scan. Now, when you think about the fact that this is day 7 of him being on Earth, he had still not had a bowel movement. They were still force feeding him this whole time. And now they just filled this little baby up with a bag full of liquid. As we were sitting there waiting for this to show us what they were going to be looking for, he ended up projectile vomiting his own feces. His eyes rolled in the back of his head. It was very thick, tar-like. He started choking. He turned blue. And we obviously were demanding to get a physician in to see what was going on. I asked them to put a sub pump in him, which they did do, and it filled up immediately. I asked them to be checked. At this point, they weren't checking his vitals. They weren't doing anything in the hospital except putting him under the lights. So my husband and I were there just basically awake at this point for, you know, 72 hours because we were just monitoring him all of the time. I had just given birth, so I was in a lot of pain personally. And that's when they actually really started to take us serious that, oh, okay, maybe there is something more going on here. At that point, I just realized that where we were probably wasn't capable to truly handle what was going on. So we started to ask if we could be transferred to another hospital. And that hospital was the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, which is, I'm sure, you know, a lot of people on this podcast have heard of this hospital. It's a wonderful, wonderful place. They had told us that the Children's Hospital will not accept us because they only take rare cases and my son should be fine. So I said, okay, that's great, but I would love for you to still just put out, you know, reach out to them and let them decide if they want to take us or not. So when they did do that, Children's Hospital got back to them within the hour and said, we will 100% take this child. We're sending our NICU team out to the hospital. So we were in New Jersey and they sent their entire NICU nurse and team out to pick up my son. The first thing they said is, why is this 7-day-old child not in the NICU? Why is he on the pediatric floor? Which was something I had asked for several times, but they told me because we were discharged for a day, he can't be in the NICU. He was 6 days old. I mean, if that doesn't qualify as a NICU, I'm not sure what does. But and we, you know, learned to find out there that the IV that we had asked them to put in, the sub pump that we had asked them to put in, everything was put in wrong. The NICU nurse had to basically redo everything. And we followed the ambulance from New Jersey to CHOP. They brought him into their NICU. And very quickly, they could tell by the signs that, okay, right away, we were there for not even a couple hours, and they brought up this word Hirschsprungs to us. And we were very like, I'm sorry, what? How do you spell that? What is this word? I've never heard of this in my entire life. And they began to say, you know, we're not sure. We're going to do a test to see, but based on everything you're saying, based on what we're seeing, this is what we think is what he has. They did also tell us after doing further scans there that the direct wording from the team there was, thank God you got him here when you did, because his organs were seconds away of bursting and he wouldn't have made it. And I remember looking at my husband while we were in the first hospital, and I said to him, I just had this true feeling of dread, you know, and I was like, he's going to die. If we don't get him out of this hospital, he is going to die. And my husband at the time was like, oh, don't put that into the universe. Like, and to me, I felt like it was almost just, this needs to be said that this is very serious, that this isn't just something that we need to. At this point, I felt like it was my obligation to protect my son and to protect my family. And unfortunately, you know, again, this is not saying for all healthcare. I work in healthcare. There's a lot of amazing people. But sometimes you really just have to trust that instinct. And sometimes you really, really just have to know that, yes, there are people that are, you know, going to listen, and there's people that have a one-track mind, and they're just going to go on the course that they think is this is what we need to do. And if there is something inside screaming at you that there is something wrong, you need to voice it and you need to advocate for yourself. My job as a mother was to advocate for my son because he couldn't advocate for himself. And I thank God every day that I listen to that little voice in my head, because our outcome would have been very, very, very different if we stayed in that original hospital. Because of the level of what he went through in those first week of life, they really couldn't do much for him at that time. He needed time to for his organs to settle and rest. So what they did was, in the hospital, they did some irrigations to kind of help clear him out. And then they put a PICC line in him. And he, once they got the results back that it was, in fact, Hirschsprung's, we had to wait in the hospital for quite a while because he was just far too weak, far too little for them to truly be able to, you know, do much for him at that time. Once he got the strength up, they did do a surgery where he came out with a colostomy bag. And they did that first step. Now, as a new parent, sitting in a hospital, already kind of went through this very traumatizing situation. My husband and I were living in the sleep rooms at CHOP. We just had the clothes on our back and maybe like two other clothes. They had a laundry room there. We were just cleaning our clothes there and just would be in the NICU all day. Every morning we would turn the lights on, we'd play music, and we would just sing and try to bring happiness to this little NICU room, to our little baby, as much as we could. But I remember when he came out of that first surgery with the colostomy bag, and there was just so much contradicting feelings as a mom. One feeling was, oh my God, like, thank God he's okay. He's alive. He's here. He had this surgery. Then the other one was looking at this colostomy bag, like, oh my God, what do I do with this? Like, how, like, what is this? What is this? Like, I thought I had to handle diapers, you know? It was such a, and then you're just, you know, thinking like, how do I dress him? How do I change him? How do I do all of these things? Like, there was just so many questions of just, what do I do? Who do I like, you know, what do we do? I can't talk to any of my friends. I can't, you know, and then you had this sense of why me? Why my son? Why us? And you feel guilty having this feeling because you think it could have been so much worse. He could have not been here with us. And I thank God that he's here. But then yet there's this other part of me of he's the first grandchild on my side of the family. And my whole family was going through this. My whole family, like, I just felt like what I was putting everyone through, like that mom guilt started coming in. Like, what did I do wrong? when, you know, you start going back through every single step of everything you could, you know, everything you could have done differently. And I know logically, that it's a genetic disorder, which we learned while we were there. I learned that really there was nothing you could do. It was going to happen regardless. I had a stellar pregnancy. I worked out the whole time. I ate really healthy. You still think, oh my God, I must have done something wrong. Because look at this poor little baby. Look at this poor little boy that I brought into this world going through what he's going through. And then you throw in that we're in a NICU in CHOP where a lot of people are there for months, years. The babies in their rooms that were in their other rooms by us. I mean, that was their rooms. That was their nursery. It was filled with toys and furniture. And, you know, you're sitting there and there's this feeling of, I feel so lucky because I know it could be worse because I'm looking around in a place where people are dealing with so much harder things for their children and have been here for years or months, 6 months. A baby was there that was on their 15th surgery and they were still trying to figure out what was going wrong right across the hall from us. So it's like you have these feelings of you live in this world now where you're actually very fortunate compared to a lot of the people around you. And yet you still feel a sense of why me? And you still see your friends on social media who have these children and everything's fine. And a couple of my friends had babies just a couple weeks after me and happy, healthy. And you start feeling like in those days, resentment, right? Like of just, it's not that you would ever wish anyone to have anything like this, of course, or go through this. But yet you think.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
I'm like, we're alone in this and no one understands. So, you know, I had my time. I had my time when I was alone where I felt very angry and sad and cried, but I never, ever would in front of my son. Because even though at that time, when he had his first surgery, we came out of the colostomy with the colostomy bag. He was 15 days old. And even though he was just this little boy just sitting in the bed, I knew I'm his mom. We're tied. And if I'm feeling this, he'll feel it. And I don't want him to ever feel anything but, you know, just my love and happiness. And, you know, so when we were in that room with him, it was nothing. Just this is our normal. This is love. And, you know, we unfortunately, I wasn't able to hold him because even after he had the surgery, they had to keep the PICC line in. They had to keep all these things. So, you know, we weren't able to really hold him for a while until he got stronger. And, you know, I just was watching him go through this. He had this major stomach surgery. And it felt like only a few days in, he was doing really well. Like he was hitting all his milestones and, you know, doing all the things he was supposed to do, getting stronger with the PICC line. And one thing I'll say as a proud mom is throughout this entire process from when he was being borderline tortured in the first hospital, right? And going through everything he was going through to being transferred to going through this 8-hour surgery that he was under and all of these things, his heart, his everything always stayed perfect. Never dropped, never nothing, ever. And I think to myself, you know, I was so adamant about staying healthy during my pregnancy. And I wonder if there was just something inside that internal mother knowing that like he needs to have all of the resources he possibly can because he needs to be strong when he first comes into this world. And he was so strong and I was so proud, like so beyond proud of him. And that is what really pushed me through all of those other not so great feelings. The resentment, the anger, the why me, the self-pity, all of that things that happen But like, I looked at this little boy and was just like, he's the one going through this right now. Like, how, you know what I mean? Like, how, like, look at this boy who just had major stomach surgery. I've never even had a surgery and he's thriving. Like, who are you right now to be doing anything but just be proud of him? So, you know, that's, you know, we were there for about like 2 months about in CHOP. Okay. And, you know, then I kind of just got through the stop this, you know, this is your life now. And you kind of have to just go with it and be, I will be the best colostomy bag changer that there will ever be. And I had my husband with me through it. We took all of these classes at CHOP. We jumped right in. Told the nurses and doctors and the wound care team, like, nope, we're doing it. Like, you just watch us. We're going to do it. We're going to figure this out because you're not going to be at home with us when we get home. And this will still be here. And we can either run from it or we can dive right into it because this is our new normal. And that's just it. It is what it is. And let me tell you, I'm really glad we did that because even with all of that, when we first got home, that colostomy bag was very, very, very challenging, Tom. Very challenging. The first couple of days we were home, it fell off. Oh my gosh. I feel like the first week we were home with him, it had to have fallen off like 5 times a day. And I called CHOP and was like, you need to send me more materials because we are running through this. Like, we don't know what's going on. The bag is just not staying. And I don't know what to do. And, you know, it was very, you know, you kind of had to laugh sometimes of just like, what is our life right now? Like, you know, we're changing colostomies. And for everyone who's gone through this, especially who maybe have colostomy bags, still adult colostomy bags are very different than baby colostomy bags. There's a lot more steps. And there's also the fact that, you know, all parents out here can, you know, acknowledge diaper rashes or something we always want to try to not have happen. So that same thing applies with a colostomy bag. You can't have the diaper rash on where their colostomy site is. So there's just so many steps to making sure that it's still protecting the skin. Everything's good. It took a solid month and a half to really start getting the hang of, you know, finding our own little quirks, you know, turning the stove on and getting our hands warm so we could put stuff on the site to keep it nice and warm so it would melt in the skin good, and having all these certain lights, and our families would come over and watch my husband and I like just spring into action, like, all right, time to change the bag. So, you know, it when we and then we were like, you know, we just went through this thing that no one understands, you know, none of our friends, none of this, but like, we're not going to live at home in fear. We're not going to not let him see things and do things. He just spent his first few months in a windowless NICU. I'm a big firm believer of fresh air outside doing those things. And it doesn't matter how much I'm struggling because I'm his mom and I need to, it's my responsibility to show him the world. It's my responsibility to not let him feel that this is going to, label him that he can't do anything that he wants to do. And I know he's only a couple months old, but I want to start this now. I want this to be, you know, he's still a baby living a normal life. He just has a colostomy bag. Who cares? And honestly, saved a lot of money on diapers for a long time. So, you know, it was, you know, that was a little positive in it. And, you know, we started just taking him out and doing things and going for walks and, you know, being out in the fresh air and taking him to aquariums. And, you know, there were times where his bag fell off in public and we were like, okay, we have to go home. And there was times where we would get upset about it, but we kept doing it. We kept trying to do those things because it was important. Mixed in with going back and forth to Children's Hospital of Philadelphia all the time, right? There's this sense of the hardest thing I had during this time period was knowing another surgery was coming. But we didn't know when. Knowing we had to live through it again, knowing we had to go back to the hospital again, it wasn't even the colostomy bag for me anymore at that point because that was just our normal. And we became very accustomed to doing it. It was more of this impending doom of my son has to go through surgery again, and I have no idea when that's going to be. And every time we went to CHOP and met with his surgical team, they would look to see what was going on, how his ostomy was doing, how he was growing, because that was his biggest thing. Because of how he started his life off, they really needed to make sure that he could grow and get strong enough to be able to endure this next surgery. What we found out during this time was Theo's case was more severe than the average, where they had to remove more than half of his colon. Luckily, there was enough that they were going to be able to do the pull-through surgery, but there was so much that was taken off that they weren't going to be able to do it in the traditional way, where they could just bring it right down, you know, and just attach it inside and, you know, be on your merry way. Because of how much was taken out, they were going to have to basically flip all of his organs around in order to make it that there was enough room to actually have it reach where it needed to go. So it was going to be a very, very intensive surgery for him that was going to be much longer than the first surgery. So they really needed to monitor his strength and his growth because they needed the space. Like, they physically needed space to be able to do this inside. So that's like the way they kept explaining it to us. So every time we would go back, you know, it's not that I wanted to rush the surgery. I just wanted to know when. I just wanted to know when it was going to be. Is it going to be a year from now? Is it going to be next week? Is it like, just when is it going to be? Because the not knowing was killing me. It just felt like I was living in a world where everything was paused. There was no healing. There was no getting through this because we weren't through it yet. We were living it still. And there was no healing until the second surgery happened, because that's what needed to be done. So I really started as a mom just really struggling with just, you know, I didn't go back to work. You know, we weren't able to provide, you know, we had support from our families in a lot of ways, but no one felt comfortable really watching him because no one knew how to handle changing the colostomy bag and you know, they were afraid to. And I understood that because it's scary to look at when you don't see it all the time. I grown to think that it was actually very cute. He had this cute little stoma. It was like shaped like a heart. And I just looked at it as this little stoma saved his life. He wouldn't be here if it wasn't for this. And that's how I looked at it. But I also understood that for our families, it was scary, you know, it was a scary thing to see. And it's not something that people talk about. So it was really my husband and I that had to go through this. And a lot was on us. And I thank God for him. I thank God for his support and his strength. My husband's a very patient, calm man. I'm very go, go, go and plan everything. You know, he really kept me, you know, calm through a lot of it. We stayed strong together. We knew this is either going to make us or break us. And we needed to stay together because it was for our son. And we needed to work through this together. And no one in the world understood how I felt more than him. And he was a wonderful man enough to know, I'm feeling this. You gave birth to him. Like, you went through everything you went through. You were in diapers in the hospital. Like, how strong are you that you were going through all of these things? You didn't even get to acknowledge that you went through childbirth. Like, you didn't even get to, like, celebrate, you know? And he had said that. And I remember one day he just sat down at dinner and looked and said, you know, I want to tell you what I saw when you went through childbirth and how proud I was of you. Because we realized we never talked about it. We never talked about this major life thing that a couple goes through. Because it just became survival mode of saving our son that we never even talked about it. And it was very beautiful to know that he saw me in that light and was able to acknowledge that I went through this. But I did realize that I just needed more support with what I was going through. And I started to go to therapy. I started going on medication for anxiety because I was having severe panic attacks all the time. waking up at 2 o'clock in the morning in February, going outside, feeling like I couldn't breathe. And I knew that so much of it was just stemming from waiting for this next step, and also knowing how intensive the surgery was going to be and not knowing what the outcome was going to be. And the surgeon himself said that the level of what he had to do, he had only done a few times, and he had done hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of Hirschsprung surgeries. He was the head surgeon at CHOP that ran this team for this surgery. And even still, he had only done this on a few, and they were also older children. So that, you know, that fear was there, that fear of just what's going to happen, you know? And after all of that, of months and months and months of visiting CHOP, going through all of this, the panic attacks, this and that, we finally got the date of when he was going to have his surgery. It was May 31st. And he had his next surgery. It was over 10 hours long. The longest day of my life. The part of my life. We just sat outside and just sat at this park bench across from the hospital and just prayed and talked. And as scared as I was, I had this true feeling that I knew he was going to be okay. Like, I knew he was in the best place he could be in. We went through what we went through in the beginning. I knew how strong he was. He's already proven that. So I'm not going to doubt him. I know he's strong enough to go through this. And he did. He made it through. And it was not that great at first. It almost wasn't successful. His body, it was really, really hard on his body. And they couldn't tell if it was going to take. And unfortunately, you know, the surgeon, he was incredible. His surgeon, so credible, so meticulous, so planning for everything. And the surgery itself was successful. But he told us, it's about time. We have to wait and see. You know, we have to wait and see if all the organs are going to turn back on and do what they're supposed to do. And that's really just, that's what it is. We just have to wait. It's up to Theo now. And, you know, he was vomiting and this and that. And, you know, those first few days were a lot of setbacks, a lot of fear. And I remember just thinking, oh my goodness, what did I do? Should we have done the second surgery? You know, you just start second guessing everything. And, you know, it was day 7 we were there. He was still throwing up, still hadn't gone to the bathroom. And the surgeon came in and was like, okay, you know, we're just going to keep monitoring. But, you know, once we hit a certain day, you know, we may have to go back in and see what's going on. And I just took these prayer cards and I put them on his stomach. And we just started praying, like, come on, baby, just give us something. I never prayed for poop more in my life. Ever. But that, if you would have told me 10 years ago that you're going to be praying for a bowel movement, I would just think you're crazy. And just out of nowhere, it worked. That moment, just out of nowhere, just something turned on. I was holding him and I thought I smelled something. And I said to my husband, I think he might have had a bowel movement. He ran out and got the nurse. And right away, the team came in. They're like, all right, let's see. Let's not get our hopes up, you know. And there it was. And I cried tears of joy. My husband cried. This whole team has been with us through all of this. We cried so hard over this dirty diaper. And I can cry right now even thinking about it. And I think to myself, what a thing that every parent in the world has. Every parent in the world has dirty diapers.
Yeah.
And one thing you take for granted, right? A thing that you get home, you're just in it. You have a child, you're at newborn stages. They're crying. They're this. They're, you know, going to the bathroom. You're changing hundreds of diapers every week. And you're so lucky that you can, because not everybody has that. And I just was just wanting that normalcy, just wanting that diaper, you know? And after that, things just really clicked. You know, we stayed there for a little while. made sure everything was good. And oh my goodness, was this boy just amazing, amazing. He did it. You know, we got home. And, you know, of course, there was fear in the beginning and, you know, making sure everything was okay. He did have a couple setbacks, you know, because I'm sure everyone is, you know, who is aware of Hirschsprung's, there is that chance that you can get that fatal infection within the first 5 years, especially. So being closely monitored, we're still very much in that. He did almost get that infection back over in the summer. We ended up back in the hospital where they monitored and made sure everything was good. But he's been amazing ever since. It is January of 2025. He was born in 2023. 2024 was the hardest year of our entire lives. But let me tell you and everyone how much he is thriving. When I look back and I thought, I will never get through this. I cannot get through this year. I can't. And I look back now and it's like what we all went through, what he all went through. And instead of living in fear, I am just determined to show him everything. We took him to Switzerland.
Oh, amazing.
It's our favorite place. And we always said, if we ever have a child, we're taking them here. And we got clearance from his surgical team. We're like, listen, he's been good. We really, really, really want to go somewhere and just celebrate health and happiness. And we know he's little, but also let's just do it. And they gave us the clearance. They gave us all of the equipment we needed just in case. They gave us our notes. We took him to Switzerland. We had the most amazing trip in the world. You know, we got to celebrate the holidays at home this year, you know. The holidays, the first year he was with us, we were in the hospital. So even something as little as watching the Thanksgiving Day parade at home in our PJs instead of in a NICU, all of these little moments of just feelings like so every day with him is a gift. I don't take for granted any little moment with him, every second of the day. I know that my life would have never been the same if he wasn't here. I think he's he reminds us every day to just, and he's the happiest little boy. He's the happiest little boy. He loves to go out. He loves food. He just had rack of lamb the other night. He loves salmon and sushi and all the things. He eats everything. And I think, you know, I don't want to be afraid to give him this stuff. I don't want him. He is an extraordinary child who went through an extraordinary moment in his life. And yes, there's still things we have to be conscious of. Yes, there's still things that we have to, you know, be careful with and keep our eye on. But I trust my motherly instincts more than ever. I got him through the hardest thing. And I know that if something else comes up, I'll know and I'll know what to do. And I know that I have Chop to fall back to for guidance and support. I have my husband. We have our family. And I have a son that is so strong and capable and happy and healthy. And you know, this is just a very small piece of who he is, and it's shaping him to be an incredible young boy. And I am just so excited to see him grow into the future. And I just know he's going to do amazing things. I feel it in my heart. I feel it in my soul. And for all parents out there who are in it right now, who are just trying to get through it, just know that you're already doing the best thing you can for your children by getting them the care that they need. And just, they're so fortunate to have that. And it will be okay. And you will get through it. And it will become your new normal. And it's just, it will all be okay. And just trust yourself and trust your instincts and do what you need to do for your family. And just don't ever, ever not appreciate the big, the small, the little moments, because life is short and it's truly the most eye-opening experience. And if you look at it that way, it's a learning moment for everybody.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, it allows you to not take for granted every little moment. And I think that's the biggest gift, to be honest. I truly do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's a fascinating, a really fascinating story. And I've got
a little long. Sorry.
No, absolutely fine. I've just been thinking over questions I'm going to ask. towards the end anyway. But no, I think that's fascinating. And you mentioned, I know you just mentioned it there about mother's instinct.
Yeah,
for anybody who's heard of my story, mine was very similar. I got very ill, told I was fine. My mum realized I really wasn't, and could have been, you know, catastrophic towards the end. But because she realized that I wasn't very well, took me back, and thankfully now fine. I mean, I would always advocate for mother's instinct. It's one of those things, I don't know whether you agree, it's one of those things, I can't quite put my finger on it as to, I can't quite explain it, but I would always advocate for mother's instinct, always.
It's so important. And I think, like, going to the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, one thing that they really focused on was the mother's instincts and the family. And they really took what we were saying. We were involved in the conversations with the surgical team and the nurses and everything through both processes. And they would say, well, how is he at home? What do you think? You know, we were very much involved in the conversation, which was a very big difference compared to the first place we were at. And they really valued the family's opinion, because in their mind, no one knows your child better than you. And as we're learning with Hirschsprungs and everything, there's so many different ways and situations of what people are going through when they get diagnosed, when it's found, how severe it is, all these things. So the fact that they see that patient-centered care very much involves the family, especially the moms, it really helps do the appropriate care. And also being able to, you know, see what it is that's needed, what's not needed. And I really appreciated that, feeling heard and listened to, because, yeah, you just know as a mom, you just know. I mean, he doesn't even talk. And I just know. I just know what he needs, what he's saying. You're tied to them, you know, and you have to trust that. And a lot of times people will make you second guess yourself, you know. It's a very common, and then you start thinking, okay, well, you know, I should trust, like, this is what they're telling me, and that's, I should listen to that. And you just, sometimes you just, you gotta listen to your gut, especially when it comes to your children. Yeah. They're your children.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know? And another thing I think you mentioned as well, when you were talking about the colostomy bag, and obviously, you've gone through a heck of a 7 days from, you know, the very final stages of pregnancy through childbirth, right through Hirschsprung's colostomy bag, all within a week. I mean, that boggles the mind for me. I mean, how someone can go through all of that in 7 days, come out the other side as normal as you are. It just absolutely blows my mind.
Took some time. I wasn't as normal when I first came home.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
But it absolutely blows my mind. And then you talk about perspective as well, because obviously having, you know, myself, I've had a couple of stomas, and they can be sort of, if you haven't seen one before, and again, if you know, you haven't had Hirschsprung's or another condition that may require a stoma, there's no reason why you would have seen one before. But I think something that was so important that you said was that perspective. You had people who've been in that hospital for months, if not years, and your child had stoma, and you were able to go home and you were doing really well and everything. And I just think, yes, you can have the why me, and I've had that before myself, and there are a lot of people who do, and there's a lot of people that will go through different stages of it. They'll sort of think, why me, and then they'll have perspective again, and then they'll go, why me, and then perspective. It's not a linear process at all. But I just think that perspective is just so important.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, I always try to be open about that, because it's, you know, as positive as I try to look at the world, it's not always like that. And it's okay to have those moments. It's okay to have moments of, why did this happen to me? What did I do? All of those things. And you need to allow those for yourselves to heal, you know, but you can't live in that. You can't live in that moment, because honestly, it's not about you anymore. It's about your child. It's about your family, and it's about getting through. And if I look at it like that, my son will grow up thinking that, why me? Why me? And like, that is not at all the message I want him to have at all. He is a capable, strong, amazing child. Why you? Because you were able to handle going through this, and you're going to be stronger for it. And it is, again, just a small piece of who you are. It is not all of who you are. And if I live in that, then that's bringing that negativity to my child and my son. And he should be nothing but proud of himself with what he went through. And I want him to grow up and understand his story and be able to talk about it and not hide from it, you know? And I think when we were very much in it, trying to get through it, it was a survival piece of like, I didn't want to talk to anyone. No one understood. And honestly, people try to say things to make you feel better. And a lot of times it just doesn't, you know, a lot of times it's like, okay, well, you don't even understand. So, you know, and even just regular parenting things like, oh, you know, try to, you know, give a bath to settle them before they go to bed at night and stuff. It's like, all right, well, giving a bath every night with a colostomy bag is not really possible. Okay. And he was getting baths when his bag fell off. Okay. I was not like, it's just even those basic advice, right? Is just like, it's not a realistic, you know, clothes that people would get us. Oh my goodness. It was just like, I can't put these pants on him with the colostomy bag because it's just going to make it pull off and pop and all these things. And it's like, you know, and you know that people mean well, but it's just, they don't understand. And, you know, it's all part of the process. It's all a part about just like learning through it and going through it. And, you know, when you get out of the other side of it and just being able to look back, like I said, you know, even just a dirty diaper to some people would be something that's, you know, trivial and annoying in this. And to us is like, we say it all the time. We celebrate poop in this house.
Yeah.
That's what we say all the time. We celebrate it, right?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I think that's a fantastic sentiment to finish on. Thank you so, so much for this. In terms of where people can find sort of Theo's story, all the lovely places you've been to, including Switzerland, which is fantastic.
People probably think we were a little crazy for it, but you know what? Best memory.
Absolutely. Where can people find you?
Well, I am on Instagram. So my Instagram is Courtney_LF. And, you know, I certainly plan on in the future becoming more and more of an advocate to the Hirschsprungs community. I am more than happy for anyone who went through it, is going through it now, or anything who just wants to talk to someone and reach out that actually can understand and relate. I am more than happy to be that person for you, whatever it is that you may need. And I just think that we are a small, tight-knit community. And I'm so happy that I found you, Tom. And I'm so happy you're allowing me to share my story. And I hope that this touches people and, you know, through the good and the bad, all the feelings that you're feeling are totally valid and totally normal. And you just got to keep fighting and it will be okay at the end of it. And when I see someone like you who went through what you went through and you have this podcast and you're doing all these things, and for me, having a son who's 1 year old and not knowing what his future is, but knowing that there's that future for him and what he's going to be, is the greatest gift you can give to someone like me. So thank you.
Thank you so much. And thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing that fascinating story. And I wish you, your husband, and Theo all the very best for the future.
Thank you so much, Tom. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprungs Podcast or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprungs_podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show and we'll bring you another episode soon.